first things first, I'm Jen Wolf. That is Nick Wright. That is Chris Candy in for Chris Carter, because we can only swap one Chris for another Chris.
Candy.
It's still CC.
It is still CC, and it's great to have you, and we appreciate you spending the morning with us. We appreciate you spending the morning with us. We have got a big program today. Tom Brady is climbing back up the quarterback ranks. The 49ers might be trying to trade for OBJ, but we have to start this morning with the ever-growing fracture in the Steelers organization. So let's take you back. On Monday, it was reported the two best players on the team, Big Ben and Antonio Brown, got into a heated argument in practice, leading to Brown's benching on Sunday. Well, it's now being reported that Brown actually requested a trade from the Steelers, a trade that is near impossible due to a heavy cap hit and the fact that he's one of the best receivers in football. Let's hear from quarterback Ben Roethlisberger on what went down.
People are making a big deal about a walkthrough on Wednesday, that there was a blow-up, a fight between he and I. I don't know anything about that. If there was a blow-up or something, I sure as heck didn't see it. This big deal was made about that, and I'm not really sure where that comes from. You know, AB and I talked to AB on Thursday morning, because after the walkthrough, AB left on Wednesday, and then on Thursday morning, I talked to AB, and everything was great and fine, and then, you know, this story just keeps growing. So, like I said, I consider AB one of my closest friends on the team.
Well, we should just mention, if everything was fine, perhaps Antonio Brown would have showed up for practice on Thursday or Friday or Saturday and then not just walk in on Sunday and expect to play and then was subsequently benched. Nick, I'll start with you. Should the Steelers actually try to trade Antonio Brown?
Yes. It takes a long walk to get me to the place where I would even contemplate trading a player of Antonio Brown's caliber for a team that is not in rebuilding mode. It'd be one thing if Ben Roethlisberger just announced his retirement and we were like, well, the Steelers are tearing it all down. And you've sat with me for the last 2 years. A lot of the stuff Odell does, I doesn't even bother me. Not only do I excuse it, I don't even know if it should be talked about. There are a lot of things that I can say that is the cost of doing business with young, rich, powerful alpha males or alpha humans, male or female. Like that's just the cost of doing business. But I need to know you're going to show up for work. I need to know I can count on you. And for all the distractions a guy like Odell can bring, there's never been an instance where it's not like he went on that boat trip in Miami and never came back. Like there was never a concern about will he be there for his teammates. And Mike Tomlin had an interesting quote about Antonio Brown a few years ago when he wouldn't stop getting these celebration penalties in the end zone. And Mike Tomlin said, well, what do you want me to do? Not play him? Because you really are out of options. You can only fine a player so much. When he's paid at AB's level, the fines don't impact him at all. And so when Antonio has gotten to a place where in a must-win game, their biggest game of the season, a season that could be salvaged if they win, if they would have won last week, which they did, and get in, which they didn't, he doesn't show up for work. He doesn't show up for work in multiple days. I have to at least see what the market is for him. I have to see, can I bring in enough talent back to deal with the talent going out the door just to have some type of accountability in the workplace?
See, I couldn't disagree with you more. Because Antonio Brown is arguably the best wide receiver in the National Football League, and you talk about showing up for work, Antonio Brown has showed up for work every single Sunday. If you go back to 2013, he's been the most productive receiver in the league, whether it's catches, yards, targets, you name it, whatever metric you want to use to judge receivers, he's been the best. He's had 1,026 targets since 2013. The next closest wide receiver doesn't have 900. So that just puts it into context what kind of player that we're talking about. And if you consider the fact that you're going to have a 37-year-old quarterback at the start of next season, you're probably going to lose Le'Veon Bell in free agency. I mean, you have to hold on to a playmaker of his caliber because your team is trying to compete for a championship. And the other thing that nobody's talking about is that this defense is finally in a position where you can compete for a championship. I mean, a couple of years ago, when you were talking about the handoff from Dick LeBeau, their defensive coordinator, to Keith Butler, that wasn't the smoothest handoff, and their defense struggled for a couple of years. But the last couple of seasons, they've been outstanding. I mean, this year, they led the league in sacks. They're sixth in total defense. I mean, to take away Antonio Brown from this team right now, I think it would it severely hurt your chances of competing for a championship in 2019.
Well, then let me just ask you as a player, Antonio Brown seems to not want to be there. He's the one that seems to have reportedly requested this trade. If you're a player like that, can you make amends and all of a sudden sort of pick up where you left off once I forget what Big Ben says. This thing had to have gotten big enough where he didn't want to play there anymore.
No, I'm interested to hear what Mike Tomlin is going to have to say, because he's got a noon press conference, and no doubt people are going to ask him about this. But you have to keep this in mind, Jenna. It's the end of a very frustrating season for the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? So emotions are going to be high. And I understand that AB might not necessarily be thinking things through, you know, soundly and being reasonable about the situation. So you give things time, and maybe this can all blow over. I mean, you're still talking about having 4 months until OTAs and offseason workouts start. So there's some time, and maybe the organization and AB can mend fences. But I think the thing that's the most concerning is that you are in a situation where this team is built to win right now. And you have a big part of that that's unhappy. And so the Pittsburgh Steelers have to figure out how they're going to make this work with AB, at least for the next couple of seasons. Keep in mind, Ben Roethlisberger is in a contract year in 2019. So I think depending on how next season goes, right, is how the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to approach the foreseeable future. But you got to give yourself another opportunity to make a run at it.
But you mentioned that the defense played better than we give them credit for. And we all know how amazing of a player Antonio Brown is. And this year they had another wide receiver in Juju actually beat him in yards, even though Antonio was the far better player. My point is they had another super productive wide receiver on the team. Big Ben led the NFL in passing yards, and yet they're done for the year. And yet they had the worst season they've had under Mike Tomlin, or at least close to it. 8-8's the worst they've had technically, I think, given the talent on the team. Yes. This is the worst year that they've had. You are always going to have an accountability problem in this locker room as long as Big Ben's the quarterback, because Big Ben has never been held accountable by the organization, and therefore he can't be held accountable by the coach. We know that Big Ben is not popular in that locker room. We know that based on the fact that he's only won team MVP once, the fact that he consistently throws teammates under the bus. But he's there. There's nothing you can do about Big Ben. He is a made man. If you want to set any type of precedent for accountability for the next time you have a guy like Martavis Bryant, whose career could go one way or another, the next time you have a guy like Le'Veon Bell, forget the holdout, who fails one drug test, and you might need to realize, hey, man, you fail another one, your time with the team could be done. We don't know how Juju's career, what direction it's going to take. You have to at some point say, we are going to take a stand. And I'm never the take a stand guy. Mm-hmm. But I got to know you're going to show up for work. And you're right, he has shown up for game days, but he wasn't available in week 17 because of the decisions he made leading up to it. And I just wonder what the narrative would have been if Mitch McCrane, their rookie addition at kicker,
didn't
because Boswell got hurt,
mm-hmm.
If he missed his field goals, and if Baker Mayfield had finished off that drive, that if the Ravens had lost and the Steelers still missed out in the playoffs because they couldn't crack 10 points in a must-win game against the Bengals because AB's not there, Juju's getting double-teamed all game instead of AB getting double-teamed, and the offense is shut down because of it.
But, Nick, you mentioned earlier that there's two reasons why, and one of them was the cap hit. It's a significant cap hit if they try to get rid of him.
Well, so it's $22 million if he's on the team next year, mm-hmm. and it's $21 million if he's not. So I understand the argument of, okay, so it's only one extra
million dollars.
But you get
something for the first one.
Well, but you would get some. I'm not saying they cut him. We live in a world where Amari Cooper got a first-round pick.
Yes.
And we live in a world where Khalil Mack, knowing that they were going to have to pay him a record-setting contract, got you two first-round picks. So what does Antonio Brown get you if the team that's trading for him has him for the next 3 years for $12 million a year? I think it's more than a first. I don't know if it's two firsts, but I think there's a team in Green Bay that's got a couple first-round picks, right?
Yeah.
That I think would be interested in a first and a third for Antonio Brown. So you don't cut him, but I would. That's why I said I would test the waters.
Sure.
I would see, can I get enough value production back to make it worthwhile trading away who I agree with you is the best receiver in the NFL?
Well, that's the balance of it, right? Because the GM for the Green Bay Packers, he recognized his team wasn't good enough to compete for a championship, so he did make some moves and be able to acquire some draft capital. But when you're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger is older than Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
And Ben Roethlisberger only has one more year under contract. They just signed Aaron Rodgers to a four-year contract extension. So you're going to have him for four more seasons after 2018. So it made sense for them to push the reset button this season. I don't know if the Steelers can afford to do that. Now, as far as your point about Mike Tomlin and preserving the integrity of his messaging to the rest of the locker room, I'm just going to go back to something that Jimmy Johnson said a long time ago. I'll treat all my players fairly, but I won't treat all my players equally. And the guys in the locker room understand that. They know that having 84 on the field gives them a better chance to win than not having it.
But here's the thing. I could even go down that bridge with you if Tomlin had played him on Sunday. Because it's not like AB didn't show up to the stadium
but
Sunday.
But what's the rumor, though, Nick? They didn't play because AB was upset at Ben Roethlisberger and they had a blow-up during the course of the week. And you just said that the organization has a problem holding Ben Roethlisberger accountable. So is it the quarterback that's the problem or the wide receiver?
I think both are the – I think right now AB is a bigger problem. I think Ben Roethlisberger is maybe the stem of all of this. But the point that I'm making is even for Mike Tomlin, who is always, like Jimmy Johnson, I think had different rules for different guys, said, this is a bridge too far. In our biggest game of the year, I'm not going to play you. When you make that decision, I think you're being foolish if you don't at least field some phone calls and see what Antonio Brown's trade value is.
And you have to assume that decision went higher than Mike Tomlin as well. That was probably a collective Pittsburgh Steelers decision.
Oh, I don't know.
To play Antonio, not to play Antonio Brown?
I mean, who plays and who doesn't play?
I think that's on Mike Tomlin.
Really?
That's not on the general
manager. The trade would be the collective. I think who plays on Sunday is a Mike Tomlin decision.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, is it Zeke or bust for the Cowboys as they get ready to play the Seattle Seahawks? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. We're going to get to Zeke and the Cowboys in just a second. But first, Hunter Bryan of Washington makes a great one-handed snag in the Rose Bowl.
That's a catch that even Chris Carter's got to be proud of. I know it's against his Buckeyes, but that is outstanding.
Since Chris Carter's not here, let me just do him real quick. These gloves, man, and these dumb defenders. Defenders on the wrong side of his hips and these gloves. Anybody make – no, this is a spectacular – one of the few spectacular plays by Washington. Oh!
On to the NBA. Ben Simmons gets creative, passes the ball off a Clippers player's back for the easy dunk.
Real quick, if people weren't watching the game, 4-point game, 15 seconds left. That's when he did this. This wasn't early. This was the most critical play of the game, and he does that.
I don't understand why the defender is on the ball for the inbounders, but he turns his back to him. That never made sense to me. That makes no sense.
It was a bad, bad play by the Clippers. It ended up costing them any chance they had to win the game. Nice play, Ben Simmons.
All right, here are two of Kawhi Leonard's career-high 45 points last night. Nice little reverse layup.
And the degree of difficulty right there, Rudy Gobert, a big guy that's known to be a rim protector. Yeah, that's pretty special.
Arguably the two best defenders in basketball were in this play, in Rudy Gobert and Kawhi Leonard. I bet it surprises some people that Kawhi's career-high is 45. That Kawhi had never had a high 40s game, but his career high had been stuck in the 41 for years. Good to see him get to 45.
Last but not least, your guy, Nick, Giannis, yamming all over John Lohr, sending him back to 2018.
Until LeBron comes back, that's the best player in the league right now.
I mean, he's got the inside track to be the MVP this year, just the way that he's been playing.
Absolutely. And the MVP is not always the best guy in the league, but right now, with LeBron hurt, it's both. He's the inside track be the MVP, and he's been the best player in the league. And, oh, yeah, by the way, the Bucks been the best team in the league.
All right, let's move on to the Cowboys, get back to football. After a sluggish 3-5 start, it seemed no one but Jerry Jones had this team making a big playoff run. Since then, Cowboys got a receiver. They shored up a great defense. They're now preparing for their playoff game against Seattle on Saturday. The Seahawks beat Dallas earlier this season. But again, that feels like it was about 38 million years ago. Here's Ezekiel Elliott on his mindset entering the playoffs.
Just knowing, you know, going into these playoffs, I'm going to have probably the heaviest workload I've had all season. So just great getting fresh and ready going into this last stretch of the season, ready for whatever they throw at me. It's hard to make the playoffs in the NFL. And that makes the moment that much more important. But, you know, I live for these moments. I love it. I can't wait to go out there and compete Saturday night. And I think this team is ready.
All right, Chris, let's break this down a little bit. How do Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys match up against Seattle?
Well, Ezekiel Elliott is the guy that stirs the drink for that Dallas Cowboys offense, and he was able to get some rest in Week 17 because the Cowboys took care of the division in Week 16 in their win over the Bucs. So the fact that Zeke is fresh, and he said as much when he was addressing the media yesterday, he said it usually takes him till Friday or Saturday to get ready for a game, to feel like he's ready, but he feels ready now.
Yeah.
I think that week off is really going to pay dividends for the Dallas Cowboys. But in terms of the X's and O's, I mean, this is one of those situations where the Cowboys are going to have to run against a loaded box. We're talking about 8 and 9 man fronts. The Seattle Seahawks, that's what they do. They're in an 8 man front or more over 30% of the time, which is third in the National Football League.
That's huge percentage.
That's a huge percentage. So, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys are going to have to find ways to be efficient in the run game, even when they don't have the most favorable looks. But also, your quarterback is going to have to make some plays down the field. And I think that was the impetus for Jason Garrett to make sure that Dak Prescott did play in Week 17
and play well,
when they had nothing to play for against the New York Giants. And Dak Prescott played really well.
Great.
That was a confidence builder, especially with some of the looks that the Giants presented to Dak Prescott. A lot of split safety looks, which is not the easiest for the passing game, but he was able to extend plays and make plays down the field. Blake Jarwin, Cole Beasley, I mean, you saw that. And so the fact that he's going to have that performance to draw on for confidence, I think that bodes well for the Dallas Cowboys.
I want to stay on Zeke for a moment. I agree with everything you said about Dak. All week I've said it was the most meaningless game I've ever seen because of what it allows Dak to go into the playoffs feeling. Defense is having to see, like, oh, now we got to account for Blake Jarwin somehow. Like, all of that was good. But for Zeke, he's going to be the best player in this game, not named Russell Wilson. He's going to be the most important player in this game, not named Russell Wilson. And what we've seen from the Cowboys, you mentioned they started 3-5. Since then, they're 7-1. We can throw out the Week 17 because Zeke didn't play it. In those seven games where they went 6-1, sure, locked up the division in that stretch, 29 touches a game and 160 yards from scrimmage per game. He has been dominant. Their most important game of the year, the game that would have flipped the division one way or another, the overtime win against Philly. People remember Amari had a huge game. He had the 3 touch. Zeke in that game, 40 touches, 40, 192 yards from scrimmage. Every single game in this stretch, he's had at least 23 touches. He's had at least 110 yards from scrimmage. An average game for him is the game against Atlanta, 30 for 201, or against Indy in a loss, 25 for 128. He has been a workhorse, and now he's fresh. That is the Cowboys' path to victory. Yes, they're going to have to make a couple big plays. There's going to have to be a couple times that they have 9 in the box. They say, you know what? Amari Cooper, single high safety, or maybe no safety if it's a zero blitz. You know, mm-hmm. We are taking our shot to a guy we traded first round pick for. But they're going to have to take those shots because they're in second and short because Zeke got him 8 yards on first down. Zeke has to be dominant. Like, that is, and the Seahawks have been excellent in the last 6 weeks of football against the run particularly.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to have to be one of those situations where the other team knows what we're going to do, but we're going to do it anyway because Tyron Smith should be fresh.
Yes.
Zach Martin should be fresh. The offensive line should be as fresh and as good as it's been all year, should be the healthiest it's been all year, aside from Travis Frederick, obviously. Let's see if they can impose their will because that's the way they win this playoff game.
I've sat next to you for the last 6-7 weeks mm-hmm. talking about the Cowboys, and not once have we had a segment where we just talk about how important Zeke is. We've talked about Dak. We've talked about that O-line. We've talked about the defense. Are we almost taking Zeke for granted? I mean, yes, he has to be perfect, but he's been that great he's the one thing you can absolutely count on this Cowboys team. Is there any doubt going against Seattle that he won't be?
No, I don't have any doubt that Zeke won't have a good performance against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, what I am worried about is that Dallas Cowboys defensive front seven going up against that Seattle rushing attack. I mean, because Seattle is just gashing people. They're number one in rushing in the NFL for a reason. That zone scheme is hard to stop. And then, of course, you can't account for Russell Wilson when he goes off script and he's able to create with his legs. So I think that Dallas Cowboys defense is going to have to step up. I can't ignore the fact that they got gashed by the Indianapolis Colts back in Week 15. Mm-hmm. I mean, they rung up over 170 yards rushing with Marlon Mack.
Yeah.
And so when you start talking about Chris Carson and that Seattle Seahawks run game, I think the Dallas Cowboys front seven has got their work cut out for them. So I think it's going to be important for the Dallas Cowboys offensively to sustain drives, to be good on third downs. And that's not necessarily something that they've been great against playoff caliber teams.
Sure.
So I think that's something that we have to keep an eye on. The Dallas Cowboys offense being able to help their defense out by sustaining drives and keeping those guys off the field.
The number one rush offense is playing in this game. It's not the team with Zeke. It's the Seattle. It's the Seattle. Yeah. And what they've done since week four, 12 of 13 games, they've had at least 150 on the ground. They've averaged 177 on the ground at over 5 yards per carry. It has been the Ravens have gotten a lot of attention as of late since Lamar was added to the lineup for being so run heavy. Seattle's been a lighter version of that all year long, which is interesting because in the previous few years, ever since Marshawn Lynch left, that had been their issue, was they couldn't establish a run. They couldn't run block, and they didn't have the personnel to do it. They thought they addressed it in the first round this year with Rashad Penny. He's been a healthy scratch most of the season. It's been Chris Carson who's been the bell cow for them. The Cowboys' front's going to have to be great, or else Seattle's going to have 12-play, 7-minute, 82-yard drives. They're going to have long drives that shorten the game, and Seattle feels great if it's a close game with Russell Wilson in the fourth quarter. Like, that is there has been the recipe to get into the postseason. To get to your point, Jenna, one of the reasons that we have taken Zeke as a given is he's been a given.
Right.
Since he – at Ohio State, he was a given. His rookie year, he wins the rushing title. Last year, he rushes more yards per game than any player in the league. The only reason he doesn't win the rushing title is the suspension. This year, he's yards per game, the best in the league. Again, like, Ezekiel Elliott is the best runner of the football in the NFL, and that's with a healthy or unhealthy offensive line.
But you know who isn't a given is his quarterback, Dak Prescott. You brought that up earlier. Before we go to break, talk a little bit about how much pressure is on Dak Prescott to pick up where Week 17 ended and a few games prior.
Well, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Dak Prescott just because he has not won a playoff game. I know 2 years ago they had the number one seed in the NFC and they lost in the divisional round to the Green Bay Packers. So even though they're at home again in the postseason, they're going up against a head coach and quarterback combination that you have to say you trust more than the Dallas Cowboys have in place right now with Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott. So, I mean, it's a situation where there's going to be some pressure. Dak is going to feel the intensity of the playoffs, especially in this particular matchup where everybody is saying that you have a team from a talent standpoint that should be able to take care of the Seattle Seahawks at home.
I hope someone told Dak this week to watch that playoff game against the Packers because he was extraordinary. That was the capstone of his amazing rookie season.
He was good in the second half of that
absolutely.
Game. Okay.
No,
let's keep
absolutely.
It in mind.
Yeah. In the first half, the whole Cowboys offense
they had stalled. A double-digit deficit going into the second half.
Right, but that's kind of to my point. He was down double digits in a playoff game against Aaron Rodgers, and they were there at the end. It took a 50-plus yard curving field goal to beat him. He was so good in the second half of that game. Remind Dak, you can do this. I don't know that I believe it, but make him believe it. You can do this in the biggest game of your life. You went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers, almost played him to a draw. That could maybe add to the confidence he built on in that Giants game last week.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, could the Giants really move on from Odell Beckham? That's the rumor. Nobody loves a rumor more than I do. That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, it's a big showdown in Dallas as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys in the NFC wildcard game. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral on First Things First. Check out this video Lonzo Ball put on his Instagram story on his way to work. Ran into teammate Lance Stephenson in traffic. Gotta love LA traffic.
And then just pulled off on him. Same exact thing
but
happened
look at
to
Lance.
Me. I was driving through New Jersey. I'm not going to say where. And I drive up on this iced out Bentley. And I'm like, whose could that be? And I look. And it's my man Chris Canny.
No.
Rocking to
come
some
on,
Indigo
man.
Girls.
Come on, man. Stop it.
What?
No, you didn't see all
did
that.
Did you hear you were rocking out too?
I heard.
Yes, the Indigo Girls.
That's how you
tell
can,
me what
that's
album.
That's how you know his story ain't true, Jenna.
Well, maybe. Listen,
that's how you know it's not true.
Maybe I got the album wrong. I don't know. I just know Canny was doing like air guitar, little air drums.
No, Nick. No. That's a nice try.
That
you dribble,
wrong.
You shoot. You go for the best. But no, happened. Not on that one.
I'm just telling you what I saw.
No.
Maybe it was a different 6 foot 9 inch black guy with a Bentley in Jersey. I don't know.
Oh, you can tell I'm 6 foot nine while I'm in the car.
What? Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay.
You were wearing a uniform. Said C. Canty.
Time for stories to start your morning. Last night, Kawhi Leonard dropped a career-high 45 against the Utah Jazz. He went 16 of 22 from the field. He made 13 free throws. Nick, how impressive was Kawhi last night?
Kawhi was spectacular. Shot 73% from the field. It was a Kobe Bryant memorial stat line. Yep. 45 points, one assist in the game. Kawhi doing it on both ends for a team that's been, without question, one of the three best teams in the league thus far. The shocking thing to, I think, a lot of people is just Kawhi's third career 40-point game. Mm-hmm. He has, dozens of games in the mid-30s, but hasn't been able to crack that 40-point mark much. Last night's career high.
Well, I don't think he's ever been in a position as a player to have to do that. He had a better supporting cast in San Antonio in terms of guys that can score the basketball at a high clip. In Toronto, they're asking him to do more of that in terms of being a scorer, and we all know he's got the tools to get it done.
He's been so good this year, all year long.
So moving on to the Lakers now. LeBron has been ruled out for tonight's game against the Thunder. This will be the fourth game that he's missed since injuring his groin last week. Lakers are 1-2 without the King so far. Nick, how does the team look without LeBron?
I mean, they've had two games that came down to the very end. They won one, they lost one. They had one game they didn't play well at all. They've been okay. I thought the last game they played where they closed it out well was a great confidence builder. Brandon Ingram played one of his best games of the season. After this Thunder game, they get the Knicks at home, then at Minnesota, at Dallas. I thought he was going to miss 3 to 5 games. Now seems more likely it's going to be closer to 5 to 8 games. We'll see how the Lakers do in this stretch.
Yeah, they just need to give LeBron James as much time as he needs to get healthy from that groin and be 100%, because you don't want this to be something that's lingering throughout the regular season. And with all the parity in the West, with everybody being right there, you know, 4 or 5 games of each other, you got time to be able to let LeBron James heal up. So you need to be patient with that.
All right, moving on. Last night, Urban Meyer coached his last game for Ohio State in the Rose Bowl win over Washington. Quarterback Dwayne Haskins put on a show. Tossed 3 touchdowns, threw for 251 yards. Our own Chris Carter was there. He tweeted that he's certain Haskins is heading to the NFL. Kenny, what'd you make of Haskins' night yesterday?
Well, I mean, a lot of people were talking about Haskins potentially being the number one pick, and I only think he solidified that in that performance in the Rose Bowl. This is a chance for a national audience to be able to see his skill set on display against Washington, and I think that he showed out. I mean, you can see that he's got a live arm. He can make all the throws, but the thing that's most impressive to me is his poise in the pocket. And you can tell that whatever stage he's on, it's not going to be too big for him. To me, because there's always a demand for a quarterback, and he seems like he is the clear-cut number one quarterback of this upcoming class. If he declares, I think Dwayne Haskins showed why he should be the number one overall pick.
The only knock on him is lack of experience, that he only a redshirt sophomore with only 1 year starting. I can't remember a player who improved their draft stock more over the final quarter of a season. Like, the Maryland game, which shouldn't have been as close as it was, but he brought him back in that game, was spectacular. He whooped Michigan. The Big Ten championship game, he was great. And yesterday, Ohio State won this game after the third quarter. He didn't make hardly any mistakes through the first three quarters. With Justin Herbert going back to school, who else would be the top quarterback taken? If he is going to be the number one pick, though, you think that means Arizona is going to be trading the pick to a team?
Oh, no doubt. Arizona's not giving up on Josh Rosen. I'm just saying that somebody is going to trade up number one just because you don't have a lot of options in this quarterback class.
He's the top quarterback on the board.
Moving on to the New York Jets, who have themselves a quarterback. They're looking for their next head coach. After moving on from Todd Bowles earlier this week, they're expected to interview former Packers head coach Mike McCarthy and former Texas Tech head coach Cliff Kingsbury. Both could potentially help mentor future of the franchise, Sam Darnold. All right, Kenny, would either of these guys be a good fit for the New York Jets?
I think Mike McCarthy would be a good fit just because you're not projecting him in that role. Mike McCarthy spent 13 seasons as the Packers head coach, and he had 125 wins and a Super Bowl championship on his resume. With Cliff Kingsbury, you're talking about somebody that was a former collegiate head coach at Texas Tech, lost his job, and then signed up to be the offensive coordinator at SC. I still think it's a learning curve in terms of going from the college ranks and being a head coach to the pro ranks and being a head coach. You're talking about the difference in coaching kids versus grown men.
So, Nick, what would be the appeal then for Kingsbury?
I don't understand the appeal for Cliff Kingsbury as a head coach. I get it as an offensive coordinator. If the story was the Jets are thinking about bringing them both there, McCarthy is the head coach, Kingsbury is the offensive coordinator, because the knock on McCarthy from the people that study football in a way I don't, and his route combinations and the lack of diversity in the offense, that's the knock on him. Kingsbury obviously can coach offense. We know that. But he was 35-40 at Tech. He was 19-35 in his career in the Big 12. He got fired at his alma mater, where he's a legendary player and where he was one of the most popular people, probably the most popular person in the city of Lubbock. And he got fired. He got an offensive coordinator job in college. Now he's an NFL head coaching candidate. I don't understand it. Here's the appeal of Cliff Kingsbury. Kind of feels like Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm.
But Sean McVay had come up in the NFL. I know he's young and they both have the same similar beards and they're both good looking.
What do I call
but
him?
Like, he's sexy
spicy
Sean McVay.
Looking.
Spicy looking, I should have called him. But like Sean McVay was a quarterback's coach, was a coordinator, was in the NFL. And Sean McVay had the benefit of taking over for Jeff Fisher, where it felt like anything new would be welcome, and had the benefit of number one overall pick Jared Goff, who we had seen. People had already written him off as a bust. So, like, there was very little expectation, very little pressure, if you will, in that spot, if such a thing exists, an NFL head coaching job. I don't understand the Cliff Kingsbury thing. And I wish him well. But if you don't show that you can be a quality collegiate head coach, the failing upwards is bizarre to me. He took a job at SC as a coordinator. That's a perfect spot for him. Why the Jets would be considering him for a head coach, I don't understand.
Is there something to who would be a better fit for Sam Darnold? Do you want a guy that's been in the league for a long time who's worked with a future Hall of Fame quarterback? Or do you want someone who's coming up in the ranks, willing to take chances, willing to see what he's got? I don't know. Is there something to that, to who he'd fit better with their quarterback?
Well, I think they're looking at it and seeing that Cliff Kingsbury could probably implement a style of play that's conducive to today's game, right? That takes advantage of the rules and defenders not being able to control the middle of the field. We see these wide open offenses with the Los Angeles Rams, with the Kansas City Chiefs, and young quarterbacks being able to thrive in this basketball on grass type of scheme. But in terms of being able to stabilize the Jets as an organization and make sure that this team plays with the level of discipline that's required to have success in this league, I can't trust Cliff Kingsbury to be able to do all of those things. And then the Jets have a funky hierarchy in terms of how the general manager and the head coach both report to the owner rather than the head coach reporting to the GM.
Right.
Just with those kind of dynamics, I don't know that I want to have a rookie NFL head coach in that type of situation. That's why I lean toward McCarthy.
And the best thing for Sam Darnold is not necessarily a coach with a certain scheme. The best thing for Sam Darnold is a coach that's not going to get fired in a couple years. The best thing for Sam Darnold
is just a good coach.
It's a good coach that's going to generate stability. But I do think everyone that's looking for the next Sean McVay, or maybe the next Matt Nagy, who's similar in McVay, who's a young guy, got his chance, he's an offensive mastermind, needs to remember that Sean McVay hired Wade Phillips, who's been a coordinator and coach in this league for 50 years, to run his defense. Matt Nagy has Vic Fangio, who's one of the most longest tenured defensive coordinators in the league. He might lose him to a head coaching job this year, but both of those guys basically said, I know I'm the head coach, but my job's the offense. I'm going to hire someone 20 to 50 years my senior to take care of the defensive side of the football. If you go with a guy like Cliff Kingsbury because you love what he can do with your quarterback, you also need to find someone that's going to take care of the other side of the ball. And I don't know, you know who'd be great at that? Todd Bowles.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he's going to come back as coordinator for the Jets. So I think people have to work this all the way through and also understand, like, I'm old enough to remember Mark Trestman when he was the sexy coordinator, even though he wasn't the same age. It was his guy from the CFL is going to revolutionize things. And it didn't work out. I don't know that everyone's going to find their version of Matt Nagy or Sean McVay.
All right, let's move on to the Giants now. It's hard to pull a ton of positives out of this season for them. They finished the year with 5 wins. It was 2 more than wins than the year before, so that's a positive, I guess. Odell Beckham Jr. had an up-and-down year, battling both an aging quarterback and an injured quad. Reports today, the 49ers would be interested in taking him if the Giants were willing to move him. Nick, should Big Blue listen to trade offers for OBJ?
I'm going to say same thing here I said with Antonio Brown, but for different reasons. Mm. Of course you should listen. Of course you should listen. Amari Cooper got a first-round pick. Khalil Mack got 2 first-round picks. Odell Beckham Jr., with cost certainty, you know what the contract is, and the signing bonus has been paid. So he actually would be making around on a per-year basis like Sammy Watkins money.
Yep.
And so it's actually a good contract. Even with the coming off an injury and suffering an injury that cost him last quarter of the season, he had over 1,000 yards receiving, and at times looked like the best quarterback on the Giants in addition to the best wide receiver on the Giants. Everyone should be interested in Odell. And if you're the Giants, you do have to look at the world through this lens. Eli's probably your quarterback again next year. Mm-hmm. When Odell signed that extension, he knew it was one more year of Eli. He got sick of Eli three games into it. And then he sat down next to high out of his mind Lil Wayne and Josina Anderson and aired him out. Like, what version of Odell are you going to get if next year the quarterback room is Kyle LaLeta and Eli Manning? And that the team is once again stuck in this neutral? I don't know. So would I be in a rush to trade him? No. Would I listen to offers? Would two first-round picks get the job done? Absolutely.
Yeah, you have to listen to offers. That just makes sense. You got to do due diligence if you're Dave Gettleman, their general manager. But when you consider where the Giants are at, I think they're going to be stuck in this rut, being a 5-11, 6-10, 7-9, 8-8 team until they figure out who's going to be the successor for Eli Manning at the quarterback position. So if you tell me they're going to trade Odell for some type of package that includes some high draft picks in order to then use that to move up in the draft to get a quarterback, that would make sense. The only thing I would say to that is the Giants are in win-now mode with a roster that's not a win-now roster. They don't have the depth on both sides of the ball to compete for a championship, but you used the second overall pick last year in a running back. And when you draft a running back, as soon as he steps on an NFL field is when his prime is. So you're talking about having Saquon Barkley this productive, 2,000 yards from scrimmage for the next 7 or 8 seasons, and yet you don't know who your quarterback is going to be. So that's why I worry about the Giants getting rid of a playmaker the caliber of Odell when they have Saquon Barkley on that team. You can take full advantage of what Saquon Barkley brings to the table when you have a guy outside the numbers at receiver in Odell Beckham Jr. that dictates fronts and coverages. If you trade him away, all of a sudden life gets a lot harder for Saquon Barkley. And I don't know that that's where you want to be if you're the Giants and still not seemingly knowing who's going to be your quarterback.
Nick, explain this to me. If they are in win now, they have their running back, they have their wide receiver if they want it. Yes, they need to work a little bit on their defense. Why not just pull the trigger, make the move at quarterback? What are we all sort of waiting for? How could he be your win-now guy?
The problem is there's no, like, I don't mean to be, like, flippant, but there's no quarterback tree. Where are they getting this guy from? They won too many games to get the number one pick.
Yes.
So if they are going to move up from, I think they're six.
They're six.
If they're going to move up from 6 to 1, like Canny thinks you would have to do, certainly move into the top three to get Dwayne Haskins, well, that's going to cost you at least one future first-round pick. And you said, I know their defense isn't that good. That is, their defense is a glaring weakness. Even if Eli was good this year, this Giants team would have topped out at 9 or 10 wins because the defense was really bad. Mm-hmm. This is the argument for trading Odell. The argument for trading Odell is, listen, we need to draft a quarterback. We need 3 playmakers on defense. We don't have enough draft capital. Go get it. Our defense is expensive and old. We are in a rebuild. Just because, let's not compound the error of not drafting a quarterback by doubling down on what is clearly not the correct strategy. Even if you can't get the quarterback this year, let's just say that the Cardinals want 3 first-round picks to move up to number one, and you say, I don't want to do it. You still can make the argument that starting the rebuild now, getting extra picks into the future that can then allow you next year to get a quarterback is the right decision. I think Odell's a great player. I think he is unfairly scrutinized in a lot of ways. I also think that a team that has a superstar running back and a superstar wide receiver, and that's it for their B quality players and above, tops out at 8 wins.
Yep.
Like I've seen this happen before. I've seen teams with Hall of Famers at those spots not be great teams because they can't fill out the rest of the roster. I would listen to it. And if I'm San Francisco, by the way, on the other side of this, it's a huge year for everyone there. Mm-hmm. For John Lynch, for Kyle Shanahan, for Jimmy Garoppolo. And you can't have George Kittle as your number one option. So, like, I understand why they would be interested in Odell.
Yeah, and you consider the free agent market for wide receivers coming up in 2019 and the 2019 draft class for wide receivers. It's not necessarily the deepest groups. So I think it makes a whole lot of sense if you're San Francisco to explore trade options to bring in a proven commodity at the wide receiver position, somebody that can be a difference maker. And when you factor in age, I don't know that there's a receiver out there that I would take in front of Odell Beckham. He's just been that good. 4 of his first 5 seasons have been 1,000-yard reception seasons. Right. And of course, he missed the majority of last year with the ankle injury. So, I mean, it makes sense for the two sides to hear each other out. But ultimately, I'm not sure that it ends up getting done.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, is Andrew Luck primed for a deep playoff run? We'll break that down next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini is here, and we missed you, Coach. It's
really
been a while.
Did.
Happy
Good
New
to see
Year.
You.
I'm going to go two-handed
Happy
handshake.
Whoa.
Happy
New Year.
I have not seen
strong.
Nick this happy to see someone in a long
yeah,
time.
I miss Coach, man. It's been too long. I was texting him during the weekend. I missed him. Good
yeah,
to see
I look
you.
Forward to his text.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
I'm sure you yeah. did. All right, let's talk about Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck will face the Texans on Saturday. For the third time this season, Colts will probably be there too. Safe to say Luck fared pretty well in the first two matchups against Houston, throwing for over 800 yards, six touchdowns. However, Luck is tempering expectations this time around.
I truly believe this. What's happened in the past has no relevance over what's going to happen, you know, in the next game. And certainly you watch film and you study and you prepare and we know each other well. Execution, fundamentals, technique, discipline, those sort of become the magic sauce. Honestly, those are the magic sauce every week.
If it was just a little more positive, I just feel like people would like Andrew Luck more. Yeah. What is the key to this matchup, Ghost? How do the Colts beat this Texans team?
I love this game. I love whenever teams can play each other who have a lot of experience playing against each other, and you get into a game like this in the playoffs, and now you can do some things. It becomes a different layer of a chess match and a different layer of strategy. And you hear what the Colts are saying, that they're not going to change that much. They may dress it up with shifts and motions, and maybe it's going to come out of a different personnel group, but they're going to be pretty much who they've been, and there's no reason for them to change much based off the success they've had. Now, on the flip side with Houston, I could see Romeo Crennel doing a lot of different things. And to some degree, they have to do some different things because of the issues they've created with T.Y. Hilton and the success that he's had. So I'm really curious to see how they can effectively pressure Andrew Luck, because they haven't done that at all, and not many people have been able to do that. And it's been a frustrating part of this process, I'm sure, for Houston.
And the reality is the Texans' pass defense has been their single biggest weakness mm-hmm. all year. We were talking about this before the show. Watt and Clowney are excellent players. But despite Watt and Clowney being there, this team is middle of the road sack percentage and bottom five in pass defense. Mm-hmm. And that Andrew Luck is one of the reasons for that. In their first game, the game that should have been a tie, but the Texans ended up winning by three in overtime, he threw for 460. In the game that kept the Colts alive for the playoffs and cost the Texans the two seed, he threw for 399. He's torched them all year, and T.Y. Hilton has torched this team his entire career. So, like, this is, to me, the Texans were rooting for the Titans Sunday night, whether they would admit that or not. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a bad matchup for the Houston Texans, and it's Andrew Luck comes into this game, and everybody that plays the Texans says, if I can stay upright, if you can keep Watt and Clowney off me, I'm going to have success. And the Colts' offensive line, Canny, has been spectacular during this run where they've won 9 of 10 at keeping Luck upright. And Luck's done a really good job mm-hmm. at what you wanted to see him work on, which is not taking extra hits, getting rid of the football. He deserves credit for that. But also Quentin Nelson and that offensive line as a whole sure. deserves credit. I think this is an awful matchup for Houston. I know that the Colts are slight underdogs. I think the Colts should be favored in this game. I think they will win this game.
No, I completely agree with you. I think this is a bad matchup for the Houston Texans. And you talked about the Colts offensive line keeping Andrew Luck upright. Well, let me tell you what the Houston Texans offensive line hasn't done for Deshaun Watson. He's been sacked 62 times this year.
Crazy.
It's the most in the NFL. They're trying to allow him to get the career knocked out of him. Mm-hmm. But I look at this Texans team and I say, I don't know that they're going to be able to offer Deshaun Watson the balance with the run game to take pressure off of that offensive line and off of the quarterback. The Colts haven't given up a 100-yard rusher all season. So, I mean, they're going to have a tough time being balanced. And if you're one-dimensional going up against any defensive front, that spells problems for your quarterback, because they're going to be able to pressure him. And then you consider the fact that in the playoffs, the intensity ratchets up. I just think this is a bad setup for the Texans. And also keep in mind this is a division opponent. So the Colts are used to playing in that building every single year. When I was playing, I had that situation two times in the postseason, and both times the road team won, when I was with the Cowboys, when I was with the Ravens. So there's not going to be an intimidation factor in terms of going into that stadium and thinking that you have a chance to be able to win.
But even as skewed as the stats were last time, it was only a three-point game. So I don't think this is that bad of a matchup. And with Deshaun Watson, it's a little bit like what Andrew Luck has gone through. He's got to figure out that 62 sacks are not all the offensive line, and it's not all the offense. He's got to make those decisions as to when to extend the plays, when not to extend the plays, and not make key mistakes because he's trying to force something down the field. That'll be a big part of it. And how well Houston can disguise coverages. You give them something they've seen the last two games, but then play something else. Give Andrew Luck something to think about early in the game and then come back out in the second half, because he's a lot like Peyton and Tom in the sense that if you just keep giving him the same thing, he's eventually going to pick you apart. So have a second pitch to start the second half is what I'd expect Houston to do.
In my opinion, Andrew Luck has been one of the best stories this season, especially what he's been through. They started the year slow, but you talk about good protection, keeping him upright, getting the ball out of his hands faster. But what makes Andrew Luck so good now? I mean, is he as good as he was before he got hurt? I mean, are you seeing anything that he's doing differently? Or, I mean, is he pretty much on pace with where he left off?
Well, to me, what Nick covered is extremely important. Throughout the early part of his career, he's taking these hits and picking up 6 yards. He was making plays, and it showed his toughness, but it wasn't worth the risk that he was taking. And he's done a much better job of not taking those hits, of making those decisions to either throw the ball away or to just live to fight another down. And to me, that's been a huge part of this. And you also look at the distribution that he's had to the receivers. He's gotten the ball to so many guys that it's not about, I need to push it to T.Y. Hilton. It's who's open. Let me get him the ball. And then that defensively becomes a really hard thing to deal with.
Well, and listen, the one knock on Luck this year, particularly the last month, is about once a game he'll make an inexplicable decision. In the Giants game at the end of the first half when they were trailing, he threw a red zone pick that just made no sense. In the Titans game, that game at 14-0, it felt like the Colts could take knees. It felt like the Titans were drawing dead. And then right before the half, he makes a decision from his goal line and throws it across his body into the middle of coverage. It's a pick six. Now it's 14-7, and they were actually in a dogfight until basically midway through the fourth quarter. So he still will at times make some throws that you're like, wait, why did he do that? But where he has been great at, he's been sacked 8 times since they've been on this winning streak. 8 times in 10 games. Yes, the offensive line's been great, but we would see so many times early in his career what Coach is talking about, which is him trying to extend plays, not in fourth down in the fourth quarter where it would be early in games for no reason, or even plays that didn't show up as sacks where, and these are the ones you and I have talked about a lot off the air, where he's looking for a crosser to get 2 yards, completes the pass, and gets blown up in the process. And, like, on the stat sheet, that's better than an incomplete pass. But in reality, it's not. He's been awesome. And so the X factor is Deshaun Watson and how great can he be? Because you're right, he does run into some sacks, but he also runs away from a lot of them. Like, if they had an immobile quarterback, that whomever it was would have been injured this year. Like this Texans team, they didn't have draft capital to go get offensive linemen. They tried to get Nate Solder. They struck out on that, and their backup plan was nothing. And so they will upgrade the offensive line this offseason. But Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, if Hopkins doesn't have 150 yards, I don't see how the Texans can move the ball effectively.
But Hopkins, what did he have, 39 yards last game? So T.Y. Hilton had 199. I think Hopkins had like 39. It was such a it's so skewed. If they can take 99 yards away from T.Y. Hilton, that would be huge. And then add another 50 to 70 to Hopkins. Now we're talking about a three-point game. This could go either way.
All right, let's take a break. Coach, stick around. Coming up, should the Steelers give in to Antonio Brown's trade request? That's next on First Things First. Every weekday morning, Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp join Jenny Taff for the day's hottest sports topics. Undisputed with Skip and Shannon every day after us on FS1 and the Fox Sports
app. Hey, Shannon, I see you doing these blind reveals, man. That's copyright infringement. Expect to hear from my attorneys.
Jenny, I see you crossing to commercial break. Just be careful out there. Back here with Coach Mangini, the ever dramatic soap opera that is the Pittsburgh Steelers continues to spin along. All right, quick recap now. On Monday, it was reported that Big Ben and Antonio Brown got into a heated argument in practice, leading to AB's benching on Sunday. It is now being reported that Brown actually requested a trade from the Steelers, a trade that's near impossible due to a heavy cap hit and also the fact that he's one of the best receivers in football. Here's Ben Roethlisberger on what went down.
People are making a big deal about a walkthrough on Wednesday, that there was a blow-up, a fight between he and I. I don't know anything about that. If there was a blow-up or something, I sure as heck didn't see it. This big deal was made about that, and I'm not really sure where that comes from. You know, AB and I talked to AB on Thursday morning, because after the walkthrough, AB left on Wednesday, and then on Thursday morning, I talked to AB, and everything was great and fine, and then, you know, this story just keeps growing. So, like I said, I consider AB one of my closest friends on the team.
All right, Coach, let's start with, first of all, what was your reaction to Antonio Brown missing the rest of the week of practice and then showing up on Sunday expecting to play?
Well, so in the quote here, he just said after the walkthrough, he left on Wednesday, right? Like Antonio left the building on Wednesday. That to me is incredible. And the fact that he missed practice on Thursday or Friday, is that where we're at
Saturday
with all this? And so it gets to the point where there's nothing that the Steelers could do besides not play him. When you miss that much practice, when you get into an issue like this and you're not in the building, there's no way you can play that guy. And it's so hard when you're in that situation because you know you're fighting for a chance to win the division. It's the most important game because it has so much significance to the postseason, and you've got to sit down your best player. But this isn't something new, I'm sure. And what's reported and what we hear about is a fraction of things that happen in buildings, and you know that. Like, there's a lot of stuff that comes out in the media that's like the tip of the iceberg. So there's way more to the story.
I'm sure there's more to the story. And when you say this isn't new, where I'll disagree is this is as extreme as it gets. I don't think something this extreme has happened before, where Antonio Brown or a player of that caliber, of that tier in that locker room, just goes AWOL for the three final days of the week to where the team has to sit him. And this is a playoff week for Pittsburgh. It's why you've sat next to me long enough to know there's a lot of behavior that you don't excuse that I can, that I think the media blows up too much of, that I think we forget we're dealing with guys in their 20s that are young and rich and sometimes irrational. But if you can't rely on a guy to show up for work in the most important days of your season, then I don't know how you can rely on him at any point moving forward. So, like, when you ask the question...
Moving forward, like, should they get rid of him?
I would certainly field the offers. I don't know what when they forced Mike Tomlin's hand as far as sitting him. You said that, right? Tomlin had no choice. He couldn't play. He couldn't play Antonio Brown in a moment where they needed Antonio Brown. I know they won the game, but they scored 16 points. They were relying on a kicker they brought in off the street because Boswell got hurt. Juju got shut down to a large degree. You know why? Because the coverage AB usually gets was shifted to Juju, and now life's not quite as easy. They were very fortunate to win that game. I've got to listen to offers because if I don't, what other penalty can I give Antonio Brown? How can I make sure this isn't just going to be his MO moving forward? A guy who, in my eyes, as great as he is, has shown on and off the field some horrific judgment over the past few years.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I guess the thought would be with a star player, the one thing that you can take from him that would affect his decision-making moving forward would be playing time. And everybody's saying that Antonio Brown is more concerned with him rather than overall team success. But I would argue that Antonio Brown didn't go AWOL for no reason, right? Antonio Brown was upset because of some of the things that we've seen from Ben Roethlisberger this year. Yeah, I know he's thrown for 34 touchdowns, a career high and a franchise record, but he's also thrown the ball to the opposing team a whole lot. And yet he seems to come out in the media and be critical of teammates and of decisions that the organization makes. So I don't necessarily know that we've seen the best leadership from Ben Roethlisberger. Agreed. And it's probably coming to a head with his relationship with Antonio Brown. So that's why AB had that potential blow up that we're hearing about. But moving forward, if you consider where the Pittsburgh Steelers are at as an organization, their window to win a championship is now. And considering that you're going to lose Le'Veon Bell in free agency and that Big Ben is going into the final year of a contract and he's going to be 37 years old, I don't know that you become a better team by getting rid of Antonio Brown.
Well, you can't. I mean, you're going to have a huge salary cap hit, and he is one of the best players. And organizationally, you're not surprised by this behavior. When you sign someone that has an element of unpredictability to him, You're going into that with your eyes wide open, and you know that once you give him a big contract with guaranteed money, with salary cap ramifications, if you get rid of him, that's it. You're stuck, and you're going to have to navigate through that unpredictable behavior, and you make that decision organizationally. So this, things like this happen. So now as an organization, you've got to respond to it, but you can't look at it and go, I had no idea that that was a possibility.
See, you just said you can't. I disagree with both of you that you can't. It's $22 million against your cap if he's on your team next year, and it's $21 million if you trade him today. So you might say, okay, so now you get $7 million of savings to not have Antonio Brown. But it's not just that. You get the draft capital in an era where Amari Cooper got you a first-round pick, so Antonio Brown's going to get you more than that. Antonio Brown, because of the way his contract's written, whoever trades for him, it's a great deal. It's 3 years at $36 million total, so it's $12 million per year, which makes him an even more attractive piece. And what I would argue is this. I would argue the Steelers' window closed this era. It closed with that Jacksonville playoff game. It closed when Le'Veon Bell didn't come back, and when this season, when they had actually pretty good health, they still couldn't get to 10 wins. The Browns are only going to get better. The Ravens are, I believe, here to stay with Lamar Jackson. Like, I think it might be time, even with Big Ben in years going into year 16, it might be time to start adding, thinking about the future for an organization that has competed in every decade since they've been in existence.
How can you say that their championship window closed last year when your quarterback led the league in passing yardage, you got one of the best receivers in the game, and you have a top 10 defense that led the league in sacks?
Because all of those things were true, and they're not one of the 12 teams still playing. All of those things were true. And even if they week 17 had gone differently, they would have been limping into the postseason.
But it's not addition by subtraction by getting rid of one of the best wide receivers in the game. Like, you don't all of a sudden get better, and you're talking about the cap charge, it's $1 million left if you trade him as opposed to keeping him. You don't get better by getting rid of Antonio Brown.
But it's also $0 in the years moving forward.
But you have less flexibility in free agency. You've got less flexibility because of that salary cap hit that you take. And then you've got to replace a guy with 100 receptions. And Antonio Brown is so hard to deal with for defenses. He is so good that at some point there's certain players that you deal with the headaches, and Pittsburgh has always been willing to deal with those headaches.
But the headaches on this team for the past couple years has been because of Lev Bell or Antonio Brown or Ben Roethlisberger. Those are really the only three people we talk about, and we keep saying, oh, well, Pittsburgh's going to have to change their culture, or they're just going to have to live with the consequences. Well, now you got rid of one. There's a chance you can get rid of the second one, and he's almost on his way out.
But so here's my thing. I think Ben Roethlisberger is a huge part of this problem. Okay. I think Ben Roethlisberger, I want to make that clear, because you said that earlier. I agree with you. I think the way the organization has treated him, for whether we want to go to the way they protected him after the motorcycle incident, the way he was protected after the horrifying allegations off the field, and Ben has always been protected. The moment Todd Haley got there, he wanted him run out of town, finally got that. He consistently threw Le'Veon Bell under the bus during this process. Maybe, I don't know it's true, but maybe a universe exists where people like Big Ben had put their arms around Le'Veon Bell during his holdout, that after 10 weeks he signs that tender, and they have him right now. We have seen what he said when they threw the pick against the Broncos, saying AB ran the wrong route. But you can't do anything about Big Ben. He is a made man in Pittsburgh. They're not cutting him. They're not trading him. We always say the Steelers have a different type of culture, a different family. If you want to maybe set Juju on a different career arc than the one Martavis went on, than the one Le'Veon Bell went on, maybe you have to have a shocking moment of trading your best player. I'm not saying cut him. You would get stuff back. You would have the same cap flexibility with him or without him because, like I said, $22 million on the cap with him, $21 million without him. Now you have a gaping hole at your number one wide receiver spot. But if this isn't tradable behavior, then nothing is. If not showing up for work in a playoff week is not tradable behavior, people were talking about trading Odell because he did an interview, because he did a stupid interview. This was letting down everyone in the organization. I can't believe I've gotten to this point. You haven't.
Well, look, I don't think I would have done the contract extension. And then when you look at this, once you start paying people that type of money, there's nothing that you can do. And they're not surprised by the way that he acts. And if you go in, if you draft a guy that's slow and he runs slow, you can't be mad at him. That's what you drafted. So if you decide to sign someone that has an element of unpredictability, and they act unpredictably,
see,
you can't be mad at them because that's what you signed up for.
Here's the I agree with that in general. But I think when the behavior ramps up, when it's been that AB's been, once upon a time it was, God, every time he scores a touchdown, it seems like he gets a celebration penalty. Like he knows it's against the rules, gets a penalty. Tomlin a few years ago said, what do you want me to do? Not play him. He's a great player. I'll deal with it. And then it's Facebook living during a speech that could have been devastating to Tomlin. Tomlin could have said anything in that spot that could have followed him forever. Then it's this offseason, allegedly, throwing furniture off a balcony that could almost hit a small child. Now it's not showing up for work. If the unpredictability gets to irrational decisions, at some point I say, hey, you want to give me a first and a third? You want to let me have more cap flexibility moving forward? See if Juju can grow into that role and we can have a reset? I'm listening. I'm certainly listening.
It has absolutely turned into a bizarre world here. I've never heard you take this side, and I haven't heard you take that side. That being said, we'll take a commercial break. Coming up, did we all jump the gun on Tom Brady's demise? That's ahead on First Things First.
Cooked. Finished. Done.
I can't answer this question before the segment. On Saturday, big showdown in Dallas as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys in the NFC wildcard game. All starts at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Saturday on Fox. You can watch it on the Fox Sports app as well. We'll get to Tom Brady with Coach Mangini in a second, but first, a couple of big plays from yesterday. Hunter Bryan of Washington makes a great one-handed snag in the Rose Bowl.
One of the few Washington highlights early in this game. This was a spectacular play. This was in the fourth quarter, pardon me, but this was a great play as Washington had just a backdoor cover to kill you if you had Ohio State minus seven. I mean, that's why gambling's just the worst.
Tell who the degenerate on the set is.
Ohio State's just dominating that whole game. This silly back. Kawhi Leonard, great job. Don't care. I won't talk about this longer.
Anyway.
How does that happen? How does that Ohio State minus seven not win, Coach?
Kawhi put up 45 last night, and we're moving on.
Sorry, Jay.
Lastly, Giannis all over John Lohr sends him back to 2018.
Nick, I know you always give guys props for challenging at the rim, but that's one of those where you gotta know that you don't have a really high percentage chance to be able to stop Giannis from being able to send that one home.
Go gadget arms, my man Giannis. You know what Milwaukee did last night, like they've been doing all week? They've been covering. Good job, Milwaukee. Way to cover the spread.
More
and have
gambling?
What are we doing?
I'm just letting you know.
When aren't you gambling?
Can
they
we say
double
that
digit favorites
in?
For the third straight game. They covered once again. Thank you. Make up for that Ohio State debacle.
Moving on.
We're on the set with Clay Travis. What are we doing? Seriously.
With Coach Mangini and Chris Canty to the New England Patriots. Not their best season, not their best Gronk, not their best Brady, still the two seed in the AFC. Is Brady showing signs of a decline at age 41? Maybe. But right now, Brady's in the driver's seat until he isn't anymore. And despite less than great stats, Pro Football Focus ranked him the fifth best quarterback in the NFL this season. All right, Coach, fifth best quarterback. Did everybody sort of give up on Brady a little too soon?
Well, who's giving up on him? Besides Nick, who's giving up on Tom Brady? And you look at what he's dealt with the whole season. They move on from their left tackle. They replace him with a guy that was a converted defensive lineman who's done a really great job.
You coached their left tackle, and you're shocked that he's a left tackle.
Look, he had a long way to go when I saw him, and he's done a great job for, you know, 1/30th of what Nate got in New York. So you do that, you lose your starting wide receiver, Gronk misses games, Edelman misses, the first four games, Danny Amendola goes to Miami. You've got all these things where Josh Gordon comes in, and then he leaves. But nobody makes a big deal about it because Tom Brady is just going to handle whatever it is, as opposed to some quarterbacks who have had weapons the whole season long and they're a little bit more explosive or they seem more explosive. But if they had to deal with the issues that Tom's had to deal with in New England, they could never do that.
Listen, I've always thought the story of Tom Brady in New England is he's overcoming that awful organizational structure they have. I always think, man, he's always in there. I mean, he's got to deal. Forget the fact that he's got to deal with the gauntlet of the AFC East. You got the Bills and the Jets and the Dolphins. I don't know how he can get through that. And now, obviously, Bill Belichick has failed him for the 18th consecutive year. And the story of Brady is overcoming. Has everyone gone crazy? Obviously, Brady is the greatest quarterback ever, and he's still a very good quarterback. But there's no way to look at Brady this year compared to Brady last year, the league MVP, and not see significant deterioration. Even in that Jets game, You can't see him miss Chris Hogan in the middle of the end zone, open by 15 yards. Could have drawn a circle around him and see him sail the ball over his head and say, oh, Brady's entering a different phase of his career. Now, he's held off this phase longer than anyone we've ever seen. And it's one of the many reasons he's the greatest quarterback ever. But for Pro Football Focus, and I love those guys, to call him the fifth best quarterback in the league this year, that's laughable.
Wow, that's a little bit strong, don't you think? Okay. I mean, when you look at the quarterbacks that are rated ahead of him, you can make the argument that Tom Brady has had a higher degree of difficulty in terms of his team qualifying for the postseason and being the second seed in the AFC when you consider his supporting cast. He doesn't have the supporting cast that Drew Brees has, that Phillip Rivers has, or even Andrew Luck. He doesn't have that. So I think you have to factor in all the things that Coach is talking about in terms of Tom Brady offering them stability and being able to carry this team. Because I think that's exactly what he's done this season with all the different moving parts and guys in and out of the lineup.
And most times when I'm out here, if we're talking about any quarterback behind Brady and he's having a bad day or a bad week or a bad season, it's like he needs more help. Oh, my God, he needs more help. How can we get him more help?
Sure.
It's always about how we can. We never, ever, ever talk about that with Tom Brady. And so, yeah, he missed Hogan on one pass. So, obviously, the guy's done. He missed a 15-yard completion. Like, if Patrick Mahomes has a hangnail, we got to cancel the game. But if Tom Brady loses his left tackle, his starting wide receiver, his second leading wide receiver, his third leading wide receiver, his tight end misses significant games, you know, who's pretty good, the sky is, it's over for him.
I understand. You're right that there are a lot of quarterbacks that Aaron Rodgers is an example, and Aaron Rodgers and Brady had very similar statistical seasons. And one of the stories with Rodgers was his coach failed him. They got rid of wide receivers. And Brady never makes excuses, and Brady never talks about that. And Brady, there have been times when Brady has had unbelievable weapons, and there's also been times like this year where he has somehow turned James White into a great threat, as he was 20 points scored in the Super Bowl against the Falcons. But nobody questions any of that. But the idea that Brady has not played at a level lower than we've seen him play since the year coming off the ACL, that's just denied by all the evidence. The team's record says that. The fact that he is outside of the top 10 in every major passing category says that. And you, for Pro Football, I mean, I'll just start listing quarterbacks. Tell me when one that you thought Brady was better than this year. Mahomes, Brees, Luck, Rivers, Watson, there's five. I'll add Russell Wilson. Now we're at six. We can keep going if you'd like. Aaron Rodgers, I said, was very close. Now we're at seven. Like, Matt Ryan, his team was terrible. He was great. Now we're at eight. Like, it's not a questioning how great the guy's been. But this year, you said it. I don't know if you meant to, but you said it. When a guy has a down year, we say it's the people around him. This is a down year for Brady. Now, can he channel it in the postseason? We'll see. But does anyone at this table think he's playing at the same level he played last year?
No, I don't think he's playing at the same level. But of all the quarterbacks that you just rattled off, those five or six guys, which one of those guys would you replace Tom Brady with and say that they would have the same record or better with Tom Brady being out? Like, I don't understand that.
You're saying this year's Patriots.
I'm talking about this year's Patriots with this team. Which one of those guys that
Brees,
you talked
Mahomes,
about,
Luck,
you think that
Rivers.
They would have a better
you think
record
they'd all
in
go
New,
to
England.
New England and play better than Tom Brady played with that group? Like, if you swap quarterbacks, no. I think Tom would go to any one of those teams and have very similar numbers to what those guys had.
Wow. Okay. Then we'll just listen. I'm seeing, I thought everyone was seeing this, a quarterback who's not as mobile in the pocket anymore. A quarterback who
not a, what are you talking about? It's like saying we're seeing a snail that's
not
as fast.
No. When I said mobile in the pocket, I always thought one of Brady's biggest strengths was being able to step up in the pocket, navigate those 3 yards.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's why I said mobility in the pocket, being able to step it away from a pass rush, never scrambling, not at all. I'm seeing a guy who a lot of times this year. What same thing we saw from Peyton in his second to last year, where he sacks himself, where he sees the rush coming and says, I'm not going to be able to get away from this. I'm going down. We're seeing a guy who is not at the same place as he's been, and that's what you're supposed to be at this point in his career. It's not sacrilege to say it. It's not unfair to say it. And to say that, it's not that he's 41. It's that it's everything else around him. It's that the Patriots knew they were going to lose those guys. And thought they'd be fine. They thought they had a new left tackle in the draft. I understand that. They'd spent the first round pick on their left tackle. I forget his name. He Isaiah Wynn
out of Georgia.
And he didn't play for them this year. He got hurt preseason. I get that. And Josh Gordon, it's not like they were counting on Josh Gordon going into the year. But it's amazing that Josh Gordon comes in.
He's productive, and then he leaves, and it's barely even a story. He's their leading receiver. He's had an impact. He leaves, and it's like, oh, yeah, of course they're going to win the next game.
That's a testament to the team and the infrastructure.
Well, all I'm saying is this. He's got 29 touchdowns and 11 interceptions, a near 3-to-1 touchdown-to-interception ratio. That's up there with the best in the game. And so if he's been able to have that level of consistency and productivity, given the guys that have been his supporting cast this season, I don't know how you say that Tom Brady isn't the clear player in the NFL that means the most to his team.
Because just real quick, it's not up there with the best in the NFL this year. This year, Matt Ryan's 5-to-1. Russell Wilson's 5-to-1. Aaron Rodgers is 13-to-1. Mahomes is 4-to-1. Breeze is 6-to-1.
Again, Nick, if you swap quarterbacks and you say that one of those guys has to go in New England with the same supporting cast, you can't definitively say that one of those guys is going to be better than what Tom Brady gave you this
year. Okay, all right.
You can't say that.
No, of course I can't definitively prove it. Nobody can prove a hypothetical. But I know what anyone that has watched the football this year and thinks Brady's playing at the same level as Andrew Luck, at the same level of Philip Rivers, forget Mahomes and Breeze, who are three standard deviations above where Brady's played this year. We'll see it in this postseason. We're just all watching different things then. I can't convince you. I just know what I've seen with my eyes. Last year, he was as good as he's ever been. This year's the worst year he's had in a decade. It's not just that Gronk got old and they lost Danny Amendola. They didn't have Julian Edelman all of last year, right? And he was pretty damn good.
Will you come back for another segment?
Yeah. And I'm going to put those rose-colored glasses on.
Right? I don't know.
Got to take a break. Coming up, did Dwayne Haskins just make himself the number one overall draft pick? Next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, we're going viral. Lamar Jackson will be the youngest quarterback in NFL history to start a playoff game Sunday when he faces off against the Chargers. Jazz guard Donovan Mitchell was seen wearing Lamar's jersey last night before his game. Donovan and Lamar both in college at Louisville during the same time. Nice little tribute there.
Nice tip of the cap by Donovan Mitchell. I see you.
Nice jersey, nice jacket. Those Balenciaga shoes, though, they're better off lighting $1,400
nice
on fire, man.
Why would you say something like that?
Because he tweeted about the person who sent the tweet was talking about the shoes. Like, I'm just saying
not be your taste.
Man, if those shoes were $14, no one would buy them. Mm. They're $1,400, so people buy them. Like, those Balenciagas, man. And now everybody's making those big cloggy look. Not my thing. Okay. So I'm just saying.
So everybody go to Nick Wright for fashion sense.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Style icon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Style icon, which he can say because Chris Carter's not here.
Oh, he's just mad because he got a few pairs of that in the back of his Bentley. Can't hide.
I absolutely have a few pairs.
Yeah, I knew it.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. Big night for Kawhi last night. Kawhi Leonard dropping 45. That's a career high. That came against the Jazz. He went 16-22 from the field. He made 13 free throws. Nick, how impressive was Kawhi last night?
He was spectacular. I mean, he was great on both ends. It's really surprising. Only his third career 40-point game. But if he had played more games, he's missed 9 of the 39 games, he'd be a top 3 MVP guy right now. He's on a top 3 team in the league. He was great last night.
Is there any weakness in his game offensively? I mean, I guess you would look at perimeter shooting and being more consistent, but I don't think that's a weakness.
No, and he in his career, I think he's up to like 38% from 3. Really just not a great distributor. One assist. This is a Kobe Bryant Memorial game. 45 points, one assist. He's not a great
They don't
passer.
Need him to facilitate for everybody else. They need him to get buckets.
He's been great. He's been so great as their number one option. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple, easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Moving on to the Lakers now. LeBron has been ruled out for tonight's game against the Thunder. This will be the fourth game that he's missed since injuring his groin last week. Lakers 1-2 without the King so far. All right, Nick, how does this team look without LeBron?
Okay. They could be 2-1 without him, but they also could be 0-3 without him. They've had two kind of coin flip games. One of the losses was a clear loss. Tonight's going to be real tough against the Thunder. But then home for the Knicks, at the Timberwolves, at Dallas, they should be able to go 2-2 over the next four. And then I would think you'd have LeBron back after seven games missed. That's the thing to watch. This is going to be 3-5 games, 5-8 games, 8-plus games. I think he'll probably be back around game 8.
Well, they're only four games back from the leader of the West, the Denver Nuggets. So you just need these guys to keep them above water, stay afloat, you know, 500, maybe a game or two better than that until LeBron James comes back. But this is one of those injuries that you can't rush.
You don't want to rush.
When you have a groin situation, give him as much time as he needs to recover from it. We haven't even gotten to the All-Star break, so give LeBron James some time.
Last night, Urban Meyer coached his last game for Ohio State in their Rose Bowl win over Washington. Quarterback Dwayne Haskins put on a show, tossed three touchdowns. He threw for 251 yards. Our own Chris Carter was there. He tweeted that he's certain Haskins is heading to the NFL. Chris Caney, what do you make of Haskins' performance yesterday?
Well, CC said a couple of months ago that he thought Dwayne Haskins would be the best quarterback available should he choose to come out in the NFL draft. And I think from that Rose Bowl performance from Haskins, he's only solidified that position. I mean, he will be the best quarterback in this year's draft class, in my opinion, probably going to be the number one overall pick. The team that's drafting number one, the Arizona Cardinals, they just drafted Josh Rosen last year, so they're not going to be in the quarterback market, but I do anticipate a heavy market to trade up to that number one pick to be able to get Haskins.
And the Cardinals need a ton of players, and so you think they might be a team, you would think, that would trade back to try to accumulate extra picks. Haskins, clear-cut number one quarterback, and what a rise for him. Spectacular against Maryland, unreal against Michigan in that pasting, and then the Big Ten Championship game and the Rose Bowl. Maybe the four best games of his college career all came in the final four games of his college career. That's what solidified him as the top quarterback available if he comes out.
All right, let's talk some Andrew Luck. He'll face the Texans on Saturday for the third time this season. I'm sure the Colts will be there as well. Safe to say Luck fared pretty well in the first two matchups against Houston, throwing for over 800 yards and six touchdowns. However, Luck is tempering expectations this time around.
I truly believe this. What's happened in the past has no relevance over what's going to happen, you know, in the next game. And certainly you watch film and you study and you prepare and we know each other well. Execution, fundamentals, technique, discipline, those sort of become the magic sauce. Honestly, those are the magic sauce every week.
All right, Colts and Texans, these two teams know each other very well. Chris Caney, what do you think the key is to this matchup?
Well, and just listening to that soundbite from Andrew Luck, he said what happened in the past has no bearing on what's going to happen in this game. And while that may be true, I think past performance is the best indicator for future performance. And what we know is that Andrew Luck torches the Houston Texans, and so does T.Y. Hilton. So I think this is a good matchup for the Colts. This is a division opponent, so they know this team very well. They know that environment that they're walking into down in Houston well. And there's not going to be an intimidation factor. There's not going to be a fear factor. And the one thing that the Colts have done really well this year is keep Andrew Luck upright. Now, they've been able to offer him some balance of a running game. Think back a few weeks ago in that matchup against the Dallas Cowboys, which is a pretty good front seven, and they gashed those guys for over 170 yards in the run game. So I look at this Colts team and say, if they can have that kind of balance on offense and have Andrew Luck work off of the run game with play action and take shots downfield to Ebron and T.Y. Hilton, it could be a long day for that Houston Texans pass defense.
Texans are devastated that the Titans didn't win that game a couple nights ago.
But they probably knew it wasn't coming. Marcus Mariota compromised.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, they knew it was coming.
But this is a terrible matchup for Houston. Because not only the history, not only do they know each other, not only that this year in two games against Houston, Luck has averaged 430 yards passing, six touchdowns, one pick. this is a, the Texans' biggest weakness, other than their offensive line, is their pass defense. And Andrew Luck, aside from about the one throw a game he makes that you're like, what were you thinking there? He is going to carve up weak pass defenses, which is what the Texans have. Additionally, the Colts have been great at keeping Luck upright. He's been, think about this, he's been sacked 18 times all year. Deshaun Watson was sacked 12 times in the two games against Indy. Wow. And that is indicative of the season. How many times have been sacked on the season, Canny?
Deshaun Watson. 62 times.
62 times. The most any player's been sacked in this league, I believe, in 10 years. And one of the most ever, the most ever, is a different Houston Texan young quarterback, David Carr, who was got the football, as you would say, knocked out of him. If you were to tell me only one road team's going to win this weekend, I think a couple could win. But if only one road team's going to win, this would be my pick.
Not favored, by the way.
They're not favored, but the line's getting shorter and shorter as the week goes on. Started as Texans by 3. It's now Texans by 2, 1.5 in some spots. I think the Colts are better. I think the Colts are better. I think, obviously, Houston will have home field, but it's indoors, so there's not going to be any weather variable. And while the Texans are very hot, going from 0-3 to 11-5, Colts are even hotter, going from 1-5 to 10-6, having won 9 of 10, with the one loss being just the head-scratching game against Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. I just think Colts are better. I think they're a more dangerous team. I think they're the more complete team. They have more paths to victory, to your point. To me, the Texans have one path to victory. That is, DeAndre Hopkins has a monster game, but if I'm Indy, I'm doubling him on every single play, and I'm seeing if anyone else can beat me.
Well, I was going to say, the Colts have one more thing, and that's that their best player is playing their best football, and that's Andrew Luck. I mean, as hot as he is, he's healthy, he's staying upright, he's more accurate, he's happy, he's excited about this. We've seen, like, a new Andrew Luck this season, just a guy that is so appreciative of having the second lease, and his line is protecting him, which makes you feel comfortable going into this game.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think that's where it starts and ends for me. In the playoffs, it's about the team that plays the overall more physical brand of football, and I think that's the Indianapolis Colts, especially in the month of December, as opposed to the Houston Texans. And I know everybody will talk about Watt, they'll talk about Clowney, Bernardrick McKinney, but when you look at this Colts team, both offensively and defensively up front, I think those groups have been more consistent throughout the entire season, and that's what's going to be at play in this playoff game this weekend. So when you consider the fact that the offensive line for the Houston Texans has allowed that much pressure on Deshaun Watson, and then you realize that over a third of his attempts are to DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, to Nick's point, the Colts secondary, they're going to take DeAndre Hopkins away, then who's going to beat you from that Texans offense? I mean, the Colts haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher all season, so you have to think that somebody else is going to be forced to step up, and I don't know that the supporting cast for Deshaun Watson is capable of doing that.
Will Fuller was an excellent speed threat for them. He got hurt. They brought in Demaryius Thomas. He got hurt. Kiki QT, who's been a nice rookie for them, he had been injured. He was, I think, a full participant at practice yesterday, so he should be a full go this weekend, but if you're down to Kiki QT is your secondary option, you don't have great secondary options. Yeah. And for the Colts, people need to understand how great they've been in this stretch. It's not just that over the last 10 weeks, they have the best record in the NFL. They have the best point differential in the NFL. They have the number one scoring defense in the NFL over this stretch. Number 5 scoring offense. This team, over these 10 weeks, has been as good as the Saints, as good as the Chiefs, as good as any of the best teams in football. The Colts have been right there with them. It's a really tough matchup for Houston. I'd be surprised if the Texans win this game. I think the Colts are better. I think the Colts are going to win.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, we'll talk about another matchup this weekend. What do the Cowboys need to do? They want to knock off the Seahawks. Hear it from Ezekiel Elliott next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini, we're talking Cowboys. After a sluggish 3-5 start, it seemed no one but Jerry Jones had this team making a big playoff run. But since then, Cowboys got a receiver, they shored up a great defense, and they're now preparing for their playoff game against Seattle on Saturday. Seahawks beat Dallas earlier this season, but again, that feels like it was about 38 million years ago. Here's Ezekiel Elliott on his mindset entering the playoffs.
Just knowing, you know, going into these playoffs, I'm going to have probably the heaviest workload I've had all season. So just great getting fresh and ready going into this last stretch of the season, ready for whatever they throw at me. It's hard to make the playoffs in the NFL, and so, I mean, that makes the moment that much more important. But, you know, I live for these moments. I love it. I can't wait to go out there and compete Saturday night, and I think this team is ready.
Coach, there's seemingly a correlation, direct correlation, between how well the Cowboys are playing and how big Zeke's hair is getting, which is why they've now framed him. I know you probably did that when you were coaching as well, but let's focus on the field. How does Zeke and the Cowboys match up against the Seattle team?
Well, it's so interesting. When you go back and you do look at the first game, Seattle knew who they wanted to be. They ran the ball 39 times for less than 3 yards a carry, but they were committed to the running game, and that's been something they've been committed to all season. Where Dallas in the same game ran the ball 19 times, averaged 8.7 yards a carry, but weren't really committed to it, didn't know who what their identity was. And Dallas has done a good job of figuring out who they are and, who, more importantly, who they need to be. And it starts with Zeke. And Zeke's ability, their willingness to commit to Zeke in the playoffs, I think, is going to be the most important thing, because things do change when you go from the regular season to the postseason, and sometimes you can overthink it, and you can try to do things that is fooling the opponent as opposed to doing what you should do. And so I'm curious whether Dallas will consistently give the ball to him, give him a chance to win the game for him, or whether they'll
try to outsmart themselves.
Yeah. And that's my biggest fear. I don't think Seattle is. I think Seattle's going to do. They're going to follow the formula that they followed, and they believe in it. I'm not sure Dallas will commit to that.
Well, here's the one thing I'll say, Coach. I mean, there are a couple of constants in this game. First of all, the Seattle Seahawks, they're going to have eight or more in the box against that Ezekiel Elliott Cowboys-led run game. So, I mean, I look at this and say, okay, Zeke is used to running against loaded fronts. He's got 75 touches against eight-man fronts. So, I mean, this is not going to be anything new for him. I think he'll find a way to have an impact on this game. But to me, it comes down to how effective is Dak Prescott going to be? I mean, I think that's why Jason Garrett made the decision to have Dak play in Week 17 against the Giants when they already had the division locked up and they were locked into the four seed in the NFC.
What, give him more reps?
No, I think it's about giving him more reps, but most importantly, building his confidence, because Dak didn't have the best game going up against the Seattle Seahawks earlier in the regular season. No. So, I mean, this is a situation where you want your quarterback to feel good about his performance and his ability going into a huge playoff game. Because let's keep in mind, Dak Prescott has played in a playoff game, but he hasn't won a playoff game. And the quarterback that he's facing has got eight wins, and he's got a Super Bowl championship on his resume. So, I mean, Dak is going to be feeling the pressure of this situation, and they're going to need for him to come through and be able to make plays in the passing game down the field.
What did you think of Jason Garrett's decision to play Dak the entirety of that game? I thought it ended up working out brilliantly for him. Now, that's kind of playing the result rather over the process, but it did allow Dak, I mean, career high in touchdowns, 380 yards passing, all of a sudden had a connection with Blake Jarwin we haven't seen all year, made, if it would have been a meaningful game, the biggest pass of his career, that 4th-and-15, down 7 in the final second of that game. What did you think of Jason Garrett's decision during the week to go with Dak and then while you're watching that game?
Yeah, well, we go through this conversation twice a year. It's the last preseason game, and it's these meaningless games that don't affect the playoff outcomes as to whether or not you play guys. And everybody has a different approach to it. Now the big difference to me is there's no pressure on him at all. So he goes out, he's completely playing with house money, and you saw what he could do in that situation. And now we're going to fast forward a week, and the pressure is going to be intense. And I'm curious which guy's going to show up.
Sure.
Ideally, that guy from last week, that's the one that carries over. But that was house money, and now everything's on the line.
You don't get more different scenario than Week 17 locked into your situation and the playoff game the following week.
Borderline preseason game where everybody's loose. And that's the best you can be. If you could go into the playoffs with that type of looseness, your guys would play at a really high level. And the big challenge from a coaching perspective is to get them depressurized as opposed to adding more pressure to themselves.
And the one thing you worry about is him regressing when that pressure ratchets up a little bit. And the one thing that we've seen from Dak Prescott is that he has made mistakes at the most inopportune times this season. Sure. I mean, even if you look at the game against the Giants where he played well, there was a sack that he took in the red zone in the first quarter of that game. He had no business taking. Now, the kicker should have made the field goal, but they didn't come up with any points in that drive. Go back to the New Orleans game that they played on Thursday night. I mean, their defense played great. But Dak Prescott had a late-game turnover. He took a sack in the red zone, fumbled by Cam Jordan, and they recovered it. Now, it just so happens that his defense bailed him out and got an interception the very next play. But those are situations that a quarterback can't make, especially when you're talking about competing for a championship and winning a playoff game?
Well, obviously, that's going to be the key. Try not to fall behind. Let Zeke be the forefront of that offense. Don't, you know, you don't have to place all that pressure on Dak right away, but then that means the defense has to play great.
So, go ahead.
With Seattle, there's a willingness to, if you pick up 1 yard, if you pick up 2 yards, if you pick up 3 yards, there's a commitment to the running game, which opens up everything else because the defense has to be there, play in and play out, and they have to honor it. What I hope Dallas doesn't do is they pick up one or they pick up two or they have a negative play. Now they think, okay, we've got to get these yards back through the passing game. To me, that's the formula that's going to lose the game for them. Commit to Zeke and then
see what
opens.
That's what they've done in this stretch. In this stretch where they've won 7 of 8, or I'll call it 6 of 7 because Zeke didn't play week 17. Here's what Zeke's had as far as touches and yards. 25-187, 30-201, 31-143, 29-135, 40-192 in their biggest game of the year. The game basically iced the division, the overtime win against Philly. 25-128 in the loss against Indy, and 23-109 in the game against Tampa. Like, there's not a bad game in that mix, and all of them are high workload games, which is why it was important to let Zeke have week 17 off. So, because he has been used at the highest rate of his football career these last 2 months, he now gets to be a little fresh. I don't know who's going to win this game. This, to me, is the closest of all the games because I think Seattle's a little bit better in every area, but home field does matter in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this game is a real coin flip game. The Vegas spread says it's basically a coin flip game. What I know is this. The Cowboys can't win without Zeke having a good game. They could lose even if Zeke has a good game, but they have no – Zeke having 16 touches for 82 yards, that's a loss for the Dallas Cowboys. I know that.
And last time they had 19 touches, right? Last time they played, he had 19 touches. But this is a responsibility of the head coach and the offensive coordinator and the quarterback to not be pressing the passing game too aggressively. Commit to Zeke, and those other things are going to open up because you are going to get tons of eight-man boxes, tons of clean looks, and that should make it that much easier to throw the ball.
When you're talking about the Seahawks commitment, I brought this game up, this random game, probably a dozen times, but I think it's something you'll appreciate. When they were playing the Rams in a critical game earlier this year, Russell Wilson got sacked by Dante Fowler late in the game, so the Rams went from up 5 to up 12. Mm-hmm. The Seahawks down 12, 5 minutes left. You know what they did to start the next drive? Ran the football. Kept running the football. They even down 2 scores, 5 minutes left, stayed true to who they were, and they were, by the way, they had the ball down 5 with a chance to go win that game. They didn't. Seahawks will stay committed no matter what. Can Dallas show the same discipline?
All right, Coach, stick around. Got to take a break coming up. Is it time for the Steelers to move on from Antonio Brown? Talk about that next on First Things First. We'll get to Tom Brady in a second, but first, couple of big plays from yesterday. Hunter Bryan of Washington makes a great one-handed snack in the Rose Bowl yesterday.
That was awesome catch. I mean, even Chris Carter would be proud of that one, going up against his Ohio State Buckeyes, the defensive back holding his left arm
even
down.
Even with gloves, kid.
My guy Chris Carter would have talked about the defender being a Dumbo,
and
like this defender.
The gloves. On to the NBA. Ben Simmons gets creative, passes the ball off a Clippers player's back for the easy dunk. Why is he turning around?
And this is, it's a 4-point game with 15 seconds left when this happens. This iced the game for Philly. What a heady play by Ben Simmons.
Yeah, Thornwell is asleep at the wheel in that situation. You can't turn your back to the inbounder.
Sendarius Thornwell, great South Carolina Gamecock product.
Last but not least, Giannis yelling all over John Lohr.
Go gadget arms from your MVP. And until LeBron comes back from the injury, right now the man who's holding the interim championship belt of best player alive. Well, go get him, Giannis.
Nick, I'm surprised you're not giving John Lohr some props for challenging at the rim. You always do
that. It's a good point. However, John Lohr, if there was ever a time to make a business decision, it's when Giannis is coming and you're John Lohr.
Yeah, you want to play a little in or out?
Let's do it.
Pro Football Focus released their end-of-season grades. To some people's surprise, Tom Brady graded out as their number 5 quarterback. So, Kenny, you in or out on Tom Brady still being a top 5 quarterback this season?
I'm in on that one. And Jenna, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to be the last to the party in terms of people that are going to say that Tom Brady is washed up. When you consider all the obstacles he's had to overcome this season, guys in and out of the lineup, injuries, suspensions, whatever, Tom Brady has still found a way to get this team to 11 wins. I mean, the defense has been inconsistent. The skill position players have been inconsistent. The one thing that hasn't is Tom Brady.
Did you say top 5 quarterback in the whole league?
Yes.
Okay. Top five in the AFC, yeah, probably. In the whole league, you got to be out. Like, it's not, I mean, just in the AFC, Mahomes, Rivers, and Deshaun Watson, clearly better. And then you go to the NFC, list another three or four guys. No, you have to be out. Tom Brady, greatest of all time. Barely a top 10 quarterback this year.
There's only two quarterbacks in the AFC that have quarterbacked their team to a better record.
Right, but we are talking about what he has done this season. There are three quarterbacks in the AFC, the three I listed, who quarterbacked their team to a better or the same record, Rivers, Mahomes, and Watson. It's insane to say he's been top five this year. We can talk more about that later.
All right, last night, Dwayne Haskins capped off an historic season at Ohio State. He became the sixth quarterback in FBS history with 50 touchdown passes in a season. But now the question is whether or not he leaves the Buckeyes. Nick, you in or out on Dwayne Haskins entering the NFL draft?
I want him to do what he wants. I hope what he wants is to leave, because he'll be a top five pick. He'll be the first quarterback taken. And if Arizona makes a trade, he will end up being the number one pick of the draft. So I'm in. Like, the fact that Justin Herbert, kid from Oregon, decided to go back to school, it's a weak crop of quarterbacks, and his final four games have been maybe the four best of his college career. For all those reasons, I am in on him going to the NFL.
Yeah, I agree, Jen. I'm going to co-sign on everything that Nick said. I mean, he's going to be a top five pick, probably the number one pick overall. We know quarterbacks get pushed up to the top of the draft, and this year they're a little short on supply, and there's always a demand. So Dwayne Haskins is probably going to leave Ohio State. I'm in on him going to the NFL now.
All right, a quarter of the league is looking for new head coaches. And Cliff Kingsbury will reportedly be getting interviews with the Jets and the Cardinals. He's currently the USC offensive coordinator after getting fired for going 35-40 in six seasons at Texas Tech. Can he win or out on Cliff Kingsbury being an NFL head coach?
I'm out on Kingsbury being an NFL coach. He was fired from Texas Tech after being one of the legendary quarterbacks of Texas Tech. So, I mean, if he lost that job, there's no reason to think that he's going to jump to the NFL ranks and all of a sudden become an overnight success at this level. So I am out on Kingsbury being an NFL coach.
I don't understand this one. I'm out entirely. This would be almost an unprecedented level of failing upwards. To be fired from your alma mater, where you are a legendary player and a very popular figure in the community, maybe the most popular figure in the city of Lubbock, Texas, and have that turn into an NFL head coaching job. Has everyone gone crazy? Like, I say this seriously. Would he be a candidate if he wasn't so damn handsome? I don't think he would be.
How seriously do you say that?
Everyone's gone nuts. Great offensive coordinator candidate. Not an NFL head coach. Not right now. No, I'm out.
Good facial features. Another day.
Great looking man.
Another story coming out of Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown has reportedly requested a trade. Despite all the drama, Brown led the NFL with 15 touchdown receptions to go along with almost 1,300 yards. Nick, you in or out on the Steelers trading Antonio Brown?
I can't believe it's gotten to this point, but when I can't rely on you to show up for work on the most important week of work of the year, I have to be in on at least listening to offers. I have to be in. I wouldn't trade him for nothing. Not the Moss to the Patriots trade when Oakland got rid of him for nothing. But when Amari Cooper can fetch a first-round pick, if I can get a first and a third, I'm listening. If I can get a first and a second, I'm doing it. If I can get a first and a first, hang up the phone and say yes. Like, no, I'm in on the Steelers if they get the right offer, because something's got to shift culturally in Pittsburgh.
I completely disagree. I'm all the way out on that one. Not only are you going to lose the running back that's led the NFL in yards from scrimmage since 2013, but you're also going to lose the wide receiver that's led all wide receivers in the NFL since 2013 in whatever category of receiving you want to pick, whether it's yards, touchdowns, or whatever catches. It doesn't matter.
He's been the best.
Antonio Brown has been the best. So, I mean, talk about losing both of those guys in the same offseason. Yeah, I'm all the way out on that one. No way does Pittsburgh, no way should they trade Antonio Brown.
All right, NFL.com released their list of the top head coaching jobs. Number one on the list, you ask? It's the Cleveland Browns, who turned their season around after firing their old head coach, Hugh Jackson. Candy, you in or out on the Browns being the best head coaching vacancy in the NFL?
I'm all the way out on this one as well, Jenna. I mean, I know they've got a lot of talent in Cleveland, and they figured out the most important piece, which is the quarterback. They've been trying to solve that one since 1999. So I understand why people are optimistic about the Browns, but I feel better about what the Green Bay Packers got going and what their new general manager is trying to do. They got two first-round draft picks, and you got Aaron Rodgers under contract for the next four seasons, and he's arguably the best quarterback in football. So I like the Green Bay Packers job more than I like the Cleveland Browns job.
Everyone acts like when you're evaluating what job take as an NFL coach, the number one factor is, do they have a quarterback? That is not the number one factor. That's the number two factor. Number one factor is, who's my boss? Who owns the team? And no team, to me, has shown less stability as far as what their owner's going to do than the Cleveland Browns, who's going to be on their, I think, 10th coach general manager since Jimmy Haslam took over. I think the most important thing for anyone when taking a job is, who am I going to work for? The best opportunity can't be working for the least stable organization. As much as I like Baker and Myles Garrett and John Dorsey, for those reasons, I'm out. I can't trust Jimmy Haslam to make the right decisions, or that I'm going to be there for more than a couple years.
But I will say this, just to push back, you can trust John Dorsey, the GM, the guy that's going to be buying the groceries.
Yeah, assuming he's there for another 4 years.
You do trust him.
Trust him if he's there.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter, Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.